Mike.
In 5, 4, 3.
That's wrong too. Piece of cake. Piece of cake. 45 years old. Nobody should have to work this hard.
Good evening. Hello, Lauren. Hello to you at home. Thank you very much for being here. We've got a good one. It's also our last one. We're all pretty amped up. I've had a bit of coffee myself today, so perhaps that's it. We've got a good one. We've got a good one. We are about to take the big USA Grand Tour, but here to celebrate the big bon voyage is Mr. Ray Schaefer. Ray Schaefer is back with us. We're very excited about that. Also, as usual, we've got the Instagram folks. We've got this pretty lady. And all the way up in Canada is this fella. What's up, producer Mike? How are you, buddy?
This pretty lady right here from Canada. It's nice to see you.
I like how you match your laptop case there, or your iPad case.
The second time I was at your apartment / studio, I wore this shirt. This is the shirt I was wearing the second time I met you in the flesh.
I say it matches your iPad case there.
Your iPad
case. And it also matches the iPad case, yes. So a double meeting with this particular garment tonight.
Don't mind me while I walk around.
No one minds when you walk around, my friend. No one minds.
All right. You are very, very supportive this evening, and we'll take it. This is a good one for you. Did you happen to read the blurb today, Mike? We'll just start with this. We'll start with Letterman
I didn't read the blurb today.
Here, before we start the show, we got to do this. Will, take it away. Okay, perfect. It's Thursday, June 22nd, 2023. We'll skip the big opening this evening. We've already got our buddy Ray Schaefer sitting here. We're excited about that. He is not a stranger to our studio. You were here when it was just a dining room table. We're going to be talking to Ray in just a few minutes, but we have some stuff to get through first, including GIFs. You didn't read the blurb, Mike? Can you read it now, or is it too late? Can you not do it while we're live? I got a gift for you. Do you care?
Of course I care. I haven't read it, but perhaps this way here, you can, you know, see the shock and awe on the face as the information is revealed.
I tell you, there may be some shock and awe. It's not like earth shattering, but the fact that you're not expecting this, I have a feeling maybe...
It'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel like you'll start crying.
I got to turn on the bridge.
No, I'm just kidding.
Maybe.
They finally delivered the organ stand and Paul Schaefer back wall. And I wanted to show it fully displayed over it. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
That would be the best.
Can you imagine? I can.
Yeah, I can. It's already happened for us. How about this? We'll do a little bit of trivia. From that late night auction where you were bidding on the Paul Schaefer stand and stuff, was there anything else from the Letterman stuff that you would have wanted?
Well, the sign. I mean, the sign was incredible.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right. None of the stuff from the auction arrived. Sorry.
I mean, the panels were great. The sign was great. Of course, the set itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, shy of all of those obvious things, would there be anything else? Yeah. And if not, that's okay.
The jacket, of course, and
that's good. Yeah, that's good. Was it a late night jacket or a late show jacket? I know it was gold sleeves.
Yeah, I believe it was a late night jacket.
Yeah, I think so. But don't you have that one already, or you don't have that one already?
I have the late show tribute version of that jacket
with the script.
Yes.
Okay. This is weird how my life works out. When we were trying to figure out Yellow Car and the part we needed was back ordered and we couldn't find a part to use in the meantime, I was all over the place. Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist. You know how when you're on the hunt, Ray Schaefer, he's nodding his head, he's been there. I was all over the place. And whenever I am someplace, I will also randomly just search Letterman, David Letterman, just because. I'm like, oh, well, I'm never here, but that's how weird things pop up. And I'm the guy who doesn't play the lotto. But the one time I'm in a weird place and I get that weird whim, I'm like, oh, I'll take one ticket, please. This was like 2 weeks ago, right, when we were searching for this part. And I saw something that was just kind of like seemed too good to be true. So I just sort of left it. I didn't do anything about it. I didn't email or anything. And then today I had to go out to the same area where that thing that I saw on Craigslist was a couple weeks ago. And I thought to myself, geez, you know, I'm going out for this other thing. And, you know, let me just follow up and whatever. So I sent off a message last night. Whatever, back and forth. I went and got the thing today and picked it up without a hitch, no problems at all, except the person who I bought it from said, oh, yeah, that was my dad's. And I was like, yeah, come on. And he's like, my dad's Ed Hall. Do you know Ed Hall? And I was like,
oh, my God.
Yeah. Are you shitting me? Of course I know Ed Hall. I mean, he was one of the original writers, but also he left the show and he became Leno's announcer for years and years on The Tonight Show. Anyway, I got this thing with the intention of getting it for you because I didn't really care as much. So I got you a gift today. This thing I got is Letterman related and it's for you. And it used to belong to Ed Hall. I have it under the desk. Do you want to see it?
I would love to see it. Ed Hall was a big part of like the late night bumper stuff and all.
Oh,
the,
hold that up.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Mr. Mark Carson's. What? That's not for me. That's for you.
No, it's not. It's not. I got it specifically to get for you before I even knew it was Ed Hall's. And then it actually says Hall on the thing here still in like, you know, some kind of wardrobe lettering. It definitely smells like an old 80s jacket. I mean, Ed Hall was there in the very, very beginning. So this is from the very, very early 80s. It's I don't even know if it says a size on here. I couldn't find one. I don't know if this will fit you, but it would definitely probably fit Candy. Or you could just have it to display.
God.
Yeah, I think it's a little small. Although it's kind of period.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, maybe it does fit me. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? Never mind. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. This is yours. But here's the rub.
Totally.
I can't stand shipping shit, so you'll have to come down here and get it, which is an excuse for you to come back down to L.A. But
done.
This is 100% yours. In my opinion, I figure anything that goes to you is still in the Letterman archive. So this is kind of a cool thing because it was somebody pretty important to the show at the time. It's a personal item. And I feel like even if you don't wear it, you know, you'll have it up in your set there or something like that. So, and
yeah.
It was the one you didn't have.
Absolutely.
And
oh
it wasn't $1,500. I'm not going to tell you how much it was, but it wasn't $1,500, which is what it went for at the auction. And I don't think we knew whose that was. I think that was just a nondescript. So, there you go. Letterman Podcast. Every Friday.
I don't even know what to say. Thank you very, 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 very much.
I love you, buddy.
I love you, too. And I'm
And it wasn't that far out of my way.
I'm glad to hear it. And you got to see Ed Hall's kid. That's
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, I got to meet Ed Hall's kid. Pretty funny. No, right where he lives. We met at his house. He's like, yeah, just
and okay, I got to ask this question. I got to ask this question because Ed and I have been going back and forth a little bit. At some point, he's coming on the show.
Oh, good.
Ed
tell him you have his old
jacket.
That's amazing.
Ed
I'm
does
sorry
not want that
you.
Jacket?
No, yes.
No, it's okay.
Yes.
Okay. As long as he doesn't want it. Like, I mean, and if he does want it, we will get it back to him if that were the case. But if he doesn't, holy crap.
He's not going to want it.
That's amazing.
It's yours. First of all, it's mine right now,
yeah,
and he can't have it back because I just bought it. And I'm giving it to you. I guess what you do with it is up to you, but.
Well, I'm just blown away. Thank you so, so, so much. And yeah, like totally.
There it is.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Good.
Thank you.
I don't know if the Don's is here this evening, but I figured he'll enjoy that as well. Jay Franzi is here. Hey, evening all. Ed was never a writer. Oh, that's right. Graphic designer. Sorry, Don Giller. You're right. I think I was mixing Halls for a moment. Wasn't there another Hall who was there for a spell in the beginning? Rich Hall?
Rich Hall. Ed, yeah. Ed came back at the end and did a little business during the golden age of TV when they had the Jay Leno special victims unit where everybody was victimized by Jay Leno. And then at the end he was like, and I'm Ed Hall. It was so...
who later went on to be the announcer.
No, but that's right? Afterwards. He came back.
No.
and did that with Letterman during the Jay Conan golden age of television stuff.
Oh, interesting. I forgot.
Yeah. He came back and did it. And I'm Ed Hall. And it was
No, you're right. Yeah. I think I had to mix my memories up because Ed Hall was his announcer way back when. And then later it was Stuttering John from the Howard Stern Show. I forgot about that completely. Mainly because why Stuttering guy to be your announcer. Hilarious.
I am blown away, Jay. My heart is exploding with gratitude. Thank you much.
Well, you had a rough Tuesday there with your wife closing the garage door on your brand new Bronco truck. So I figured, you know, the least we could do. He was pulling his new Bronco. His new Bronco that he waited a year for. All duded up. It's a beautiful truck. As he was pulling it in for the show. She's like, oh, you in? Whatever. Luckily, they're all good.
It's all fine.
Don's has one of those old jackets, I'm sure. This one would probably fit him, ironically. His sister Sue handled the stupid pet tricks. Sue Hall. Right. Sister Sue. Yeah, it was. I was thinking of Rich Hall. Different guys. Although, it's funny. I had Ed Hall's face in my head. I just confused. Surprised. I got confused. Let's see. Do we do any of the business stuff? Do we even need to today? We've got our buddy Ray Schaefer here. Maybe we'll just do it as it goes. How are you feeling? I didn't really see you much today. I was running around.
Same as normal.
Same as Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay. Body crap. Mind a little better? Not great.
Status quo.
Okay. Your eyes look great.
Which is good.
Your eyes look better lately.
Thanks.
There was, you know what I mean? There was a period where you were just in so much pain that they were just kind of getting lost a little bit.
Yeah, that's when my eyes stopped moving.
Right.
They got really dry and just sat there like a glass eye.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that. Little Sammy Davis, Peter Falk, Sandy Duncan.
It felt so weird. Whatever.
All famous glass eyes if you're playing at home. If you're playing Pyramid along at home with us. Famous glass eyes. Oh, I might be wrong then. I think so. Rich was a morning show writer. There it is. Yeah. And then Don Giller, we drove past Meryl Marco's house the other day since we were over there on Sundays. We typically are over there by Johnny Carson's house and by Meryl Marco's house. And there was a bit of that for a bit there, right? Too, as well? I think so. Yeah. Let's move on.
Was there an orange truck in front?
That was public knowledge, wasn't it? We can say that. We can talk about it. It's been in books and stuff. Yeah, didn't Meryl and Rich Hall date for a spell there? Or was that Ed Hall? The more embarrassed I get on this show, the more people seem to like it. Great. Our buddy Adam Ferrara is touring all over the place right now. He is working a lot. Go to adamferrara.com and check out his dates. All over the place. I'm hoping that we'll run into some people we know at some point when we're going around. I'd really love to hit Austin and hit the Comedy Mothership while we're going across.
That'd be so fun.
Don't you think?
Yes.
All right, so we need to see if we know anybody to make that happen.
It's one place I wish I still worked in this business because it sounds like a really fun place.
Don Giller. She loves folks dropping by. We didn't stop in or anything. We were just we literally drove past it is all. But it's hard not to think of you. Sorry. Too many things at once.
Good thing I have no memory.
Hi, I'm Tom. Somebody said, why do you say, hi, I'm Tom? Why can't she be Forgetful Lucy? Which was like a very nice thought. Because, why can't you be the beautiful Drew Barrymore, versus that weird guy in the stairwell? The truth is, Forgetful Lucy is actually kind of sad. And I think the Hi, I'm Tom is sort of our kind of joke to make it not sad for us.
Yeah.
You used to call it Skippy. You used to call your brain skipping Skippy.
Yeah, I walked then. It was all different.
Yeah. So the Hi, I'm Tom is just kind of like a quick... And then it gets a laugh, and then the moment's a little bit softer.
Yeah, the Lucy thing is long and maudlin, and I get sad like a cat about.
But try to explain that to somebody who's just trying to help. And they're like, in their logic, they're like, but she's the pretty girl, you know? It doesn't, they can't get it. They don't experience what you do.
And they won't, and that's awesome. My quick answer to that is we both know him.
Say it again.
We both know him.
Oh, in real life?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point, too. We actually know Adam Covert, Alan Covert, who's playing the Hi, I'm Tom guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess we don't know Drew Barrymore. Been around Drew Barrymore. But definitely don't know her. Hey, what's
met
up?
Her, but I worked with Alan, and I think you did something with him.
Yeah, like, worked on a number of things with him.
Yeah, so it's... way closer to home.
What were we doing in it's always a weird story in San Francisco, from the valet stealing my car to all sorts of... What were we working on where... I think I was there for Mythbusters stuff, but you were there for Nick Swartzen, and Alan Covert was there, and you guys were shooting in a porn studio for some reason? There's
yes.
nothing dirty. There was no actual of that, but
yes,
it was like...
and I can't remember the movie. I'm running through all the in my head, and yeah. I have an idea, but I remember that. So
it wasn't supposed. Nobody knew it was going
to
be.
No
that.
One knew, and it was just had a weird feeling to it, and no one was comfortable.
Imagine somebody says, "Hey, come to our podcast." Oh, absolutely, great! And they got a lot of views, and it's going to be, you know, oh, everything's fine. But then nobody really mentions where they do their podcast. It was that kind of thing.
In San Fran, with a secret guy that didn't talk about things. It was so weird.
Hey, Mike. Now let's do a little Rupert plug for our buddy.
Sounds
good
to me.
At it. I like when you do it.
Hey, everybody. Have you ever thought about getting official Late Show with David Letterman merchandise? So have we. There's only one place that you can get it, and it's at the Hello Deli. Nestled within the womb of the Ed Sullivan Theater, the Hello Deli has been giving soup and sandwiches to the good people of New York for over 30 years. In fact, they're a landmark. And did you know they're the only place you can get official Late Show with David Letterman merchandise? But you don't have to go to New York to do it. You can go to hello-deli.com. Hats, mugs, t-shirts, and more. And also get your Rupert official merchandise, because the Hello Deli is for sale, and we don't know how long they're going to do this for. Hello-deli.com is the place to be if you can't be there in person. Go to hello-deli.com and get your merchandise right now. How's that?
It's so great. I don't have to lift a finger. I can just sit here. I love it. Please let's not stop doing it. So great. Hey, Mike, did you tell them about the GVBC stuff we have available at Dual Shift?
Hey, everybody. Have you wanted to support Good Vibes Breakfast Club but can't be there in person? That's okay. You can go to dualshift.com and get the best Good Vibes Breakfast Club merchandise. Hats, shirts, 111 shirts, stickers, and way more. Go to dualshift.com and
more.
You too can feel the good vibes.
That was great. I know. Were you choking in the middle there? What happened?
A little bit, yeah. I had to swallow, and it just, it was a thing.
People
but
are going
to
think you're
out.
Lying. People are going to think you're like, it's the, it's the, it's the soft, softest material. It's like visually not looking someone in the eye. I mean, verbally not looking someone in the eye. I'm feeling like Joey from Friends with all of the,
all of the clothes.
I'm wearing all the, this is everything you own.
Do some lunges.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Good memory, buddy. Good memory. What is it about our generation? We can't remember anything that's happened since COVID, but every episode of every sitcom we ever watched is locked in there.
Before we had multiple devices going at the same time.
Shit, I'll give you that. Yep. That's true. Usually it was like one screen you were looking at a time.
Yeah, we all watched that thing because that's what you talked about the next day. Mm. So it's locked in.
Wow.
Yep.
You're very astute. I bet you were really good at what you used to do.
Yeah.
Oh, jacket.
Dual Shift, he did it. Byron Bauer's Spiritual N-Word is available on Hulu. Hulu, it's a wonderful special. I don't even know if I'd call it a comedy special. While it is hilarious, it's it's I'm going to call it groundbreaking, because I think he breaks some boundaries in ways that haven't previously been done, and I think he describes things in ways that haven't previously been described, which will help people unlock their own brain a little bit. So check out Byron Bowers. Search it, Byron Bowers. You don't have to look up the title, Spiritual. You can just look up the name Byron Bowers. He's like Richard Pryor did it that way. I always thought that was cool. He would, the special would be entitled something totally inflammatory. Provocative. How's that? Something provocative. But it would really just be Richard Pryor. And then that N-word's crazy.
I've noticed a lot of comedians doing that lately.
Lately, too. Yeah. Somebody got hip to it, and they're like, yeah. All right. That's how you
just put your name on there, and then you call it whatever you want.
Yeah, because it's all you need. You're so smart. Is there anything else we need to talk to? I thought we'd play Stump the Dons tonight. Dennis Day is here. I don't even get that reference. But Don Giller, anything further on the ZZ Top sawing off the desk thing? Oh, Mike! Last thing I'll do, and then we'll get to Ray Shaver. I've been waiting to tell you this. After sure. You left on Tuesday, you remember we were having a Stump the Dons moment of dates? Here's your winner right over here.
Nice.
He walked it back. Apparently, in the official Late Show archive, it was labeled blah, 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 something in 1995, and then he walked it back. He looked into his stuff and found it in 94. June 20th, 94.
Congratulations.
For Stumping two on. Reasons, probably, right? A couple of reasons, if you remember. What happened with that episode last week? It went to like 75 views, and then yesterday or this morning, it just started climbing, and now it's got several hundred. What? Why? I never even made a thumbnail for it.
No idea.
Did you do something? Did you push some sort of marketing button or something? Is there?
I might have hit share. Like when they come up on my feed, I hit share sometimes. I don't know that I did though. I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Well, whatever it is, it's good. Huh. Appreciate it. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. Also to the Instagram people who are peeping in the window over there. It's its own weird thing. Ray Shaver over there. There we go. All right. Well, then, in that case, I think without further ado, we get to our guest, who we are very, very excited to see. You wouldn't know it, by the way. We've been blathering on. But Ray Shaver, it's such a pleasure to see you. You were one of our first guests when you were representing Porsche. That was a big deal getting here the first time, getting all the paperwork signed off. Do you remember that?
I
think that's the only episode that Porsche co-owns, if I'm not mistaken.
It could mean something someday, yeah.
And then you started coming back every year for Lufka Cult, always with different friends.
That's right. This is the first time I think I've sat here without anybody next to me.
Oh, is that right?
I think.
That doesn't feel right. I feel like maybe this is your fifth time.
Maybe.
Whatever it is, we're very, very happy to have you here. But it was always Porsche you were representing before. You've made some life shifts, some career changes, still while staying very close to home.
Of course.
I want to talk about it all. I want to talk about the 75th anniversary of Porsche and the auction you guys just did, because heck of a result. And then I want to talk about the PCA car that you guys auctioned off that you just delivered to somebody we all know. I want to talk about that. So, and everything else.
Good stuff. Well, thank
you.
Your turn. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me back. I mean, really, it's whether there's someone next to me or not, it's the fact that you guys are across from me that matters most. And it's great to be here and see you guys again. It really is. So thank you for having me back. Absolutely. I want to know, how many iPhones do you actually own now? And is there like a friends and family deal or something that in order to pull this off? Because this is amazing.
You're hilarious. We do sponsorships on this show. There's names next to all of the iPhones that have been sponsored or equipment that is sponsored. So we're actually looking for new iPhones now because we've timed out some of the other ones. But we have people send us their old ones that are 2 or 3, 4 years old that still work for our equipment. And then we put their name on it. And then Hank on camera 2 becomes the camera person for 2. So in answer to your question, I don't know, because we've rotated a few times. We run 6 cameras in here, wow. Plus the Instagram feed, if you want to count that.
And, of course, I go back 5 years to the 70th anniversary of Porsche when I was here for the first time. And I think you had 1 iPhone and 1 iPad, if I remember correctly, and a laptop.
I can't remember. We always had multiple cameras just because that's me. I wanted TV from the beginning. But you're right. three. I'm guessing there was probably just three. And I might not have even had an iPad in the beginning. I was sort of doing it from my own iPhone. Remember that? It was really rough. And then if you remember an iPad, that was probably brand new when you guys came. Tori Alonso.
Yeah.
And Dwight Knowlton.
First time.
And Ray Schaefer. That was our first time meeting.
Yeah, that's right. I had that picture in my home office, actually, of the we took around the table that time. Yeah, that was great. It was a great experience. I mean, it's always a great experience to come back here and be with you guys. I mean, driving out here today from Palm Springs, and I stopped by and visited Rod at his shop, and then we went over to the Haggerty and Garage and Social down the street, which is amazing.
Think?
And David says hello, by the way.
Oh, good. What'd you think?
It's amazing.
Isn't that stunning?
It's amazing. I mean, if that doesn't work out for some reason, you guys should go into the interior design for car guys. Because it's amazing.
Yeah.
It is amazing.
The idea of the large house format is so cool to me.
Isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah. So I think that's amazing. But it brings me back to the idea of the community and all the people that that are out here. And it just hits me every time I'm here. It's such a great car community. Of course, I drove over to the Garage and Social with Rod's dad. Next to me, and of course we had about 15 minutes to talk and get the background, you know, on Dean Batchelor and the early road and track days and things. I mean, this is all stuff that, you know, speaks to my upbringing of it in the 80s, and of course they were there for it when it was happening. I mean, it's just
amazing. Did you know Gary was going to be here?
No.
Or that's just a coincidence? That's very cool.
Yeah, I just go over to the shop and like, oh, Rod had to run down to the Garage and Social, and he's like, if you're going to go down there and see him, let me get a ride with you because I need to go see him. And so I'm like, okay. So how awesome is that?
But that location is celebrating SoCal car culture, and you're driving there with one of the legends. That's
amazing.
Super cool.
Just amazing. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just...
What are you driving while you're in town, I got to ask?
Unfortunately, it's nothing that... I mean, it's a Chevy Malibu, which I guess is
nice.
Appropriate, right? Because Malibu's not far from here.
Sure.
So
it's awful.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Why do all those cars get the good car place names? I mean, the cars that shouldn't have those names, you know, Grand Prix, Malibu.
So people get them.
Right.
Yeah.
So good point.
Marketing.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. So the Grand Prix was cool at one point.
There was a point in time. That's right. It was a big seller.
I just think of NASCAR.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well,
I think it eventually got to that point. Yeah. So, no, I was not in a Porsche. I was in a Malibu, which it's a nice car. It has Apple CarPlay. I need that when I travel. So gets me here.
We don't even understand new cars. There's so many screens and connectivity things that I don't understand that get in the way of me enjoying the experience or getting just simply to plan B, place B, point B. B,
yep.
Going to B.
A
from
to
A
B.
To B.
A to B. Yeah, we were actually talking about that last night at dinner with a friend of mine. We were talking about when I used to deliver cars, Porsche cars, as a salesman, it was all on the 986, 996 generation. So you basically had... the air conditioning unit, how to turn on the lights, how to work the radio. And that was about it, right? There was nothing else to that car. And, of course, by the time the 997 comes along, it gets a little bit more. And then eventually the 991, right? And now the 992. So through all that, you know, I became the sales manager and then the general manager, which means you're no longer actually delivering the cars. So your knowledge of how to work all that, the depth of everything that's there, I don't have that.
Hilarious.
But I can go back to a 986 Boxster or something like that and tell you how to turn the headlights on. I'm pretty good at that.
That's hilarious. I'm the same way. You take me to a 90 Saturn, I'll show you what every button does.
Right.
Good Lord.
Right. I mean,
I'm not proud of that.
Yeah. There's a generation of people that do not know how to set the time on a Delco GM radio. Just think about that. I mean, let that sink in.
A little button.
Right. Pull it out, push it in. Anyway, we're getting off topic. So.
Yeah, but speaking of that pull it out, push it in thing, you wanted to talk about 944s, and even though it's probably not the time, the odometer reset place in the later dash 944 was one of my favorite weird idiosyncrasies about that car.
Total hidden odometer reset button.
In the vent.
Yeah.
It's like in the...
Beautifully designed. I mean, when you think about it, really, if you're a design person, I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah, but who goes, I want it there, and make... part of that other thing be the button for it.
Somebody did.
I know.
I mean, that's the thing. There's a level of attention to detail that somebody did. And I think that's cool.
Can we just talk about 944 stuff? Because between what you've been driving and then what you've been auctioning,
yeah, let's go
a
right
lot
to
of interesting
it because,
stuff.
Because if we actually look at it from a timeline standpoint, it was about this time last summer that I had the first taste of spending a full day at VIR in a number of 944 Turbo Cups that were all from the Canadian Rothmans Turbo Cup series. And at the end of the day, because I was roped into it with this sort of like, why don't you just come up to the track? We need to exercise these cars, you know, just help us drive them, you know, that kind of, which sounds like a, you know, wonderful,
excellent invitation.
Wonderful invitation, right? So the hook was put out. And then by the end of that day, my friend Ramsey, who you know, Ramsey Potts, says to me,
Ramsey?
Yes. Yes, right. Which we have him to talk about as well from other areas. But he said to me, he goes, you know, if you sold your 964 Turbo, maybe you could buy one of those and then go racing, because he knows how much I like racing, right? But I had that out of my system, so that shouldn't even be a conversation.
Also, you guys both kart a lot, which...
We did, yeah.
Oh, you're not doing that anymore?
Yeah, well, there's cars
now.
Oh,
you graduated. All
right. There's cars now, right? We were smart when we were just doing the karting, because that doesn't cost much.
But usually it quenches the thirst.
It does. It does.
Not in this case.
But, okay. You know, you've seen a 944 Turbo before. They're beautiful cars.
Yeah, I had one, and those race cars are way better looking.
They are. Yeah, they sit
white
right.
Wheels.
Yeah, magnesium phone dials. I know. How cool is that? So I have several sets of those things now that have my name on them. So, yeah, it's funny how those things multiply.
So did you sell your 964 Turbo?
Yeah, I did. It's just you know, the stars kind of all aligned where everything made sense. And so last fall, make a long story short, last fall I ended up with one of the 38 cars that were designed and built at the factory for, it's a factory lightweight, for racing. Yeah, I mean, it's just really cool, the changes that they made to the car and everything to get it ready for the series. And they sold them all through the dealerships in Canada, which is how they managed to get, most of them got these executable titles so that you could actually register the car for road use.
Do you know where yours was sold?
Yeah, they were sold through Canada. Yeah, I went into the series, and the guy that owned my car actually raced it. A lot of people like Scott Goodyear and the Front Runners, you know, they were with teams that were leasing the cars and what have you. So they sort of treated them like the race car tools that they are. Whereas my guy, you know, didn't want to dent his car, trying to be very careful with it. So what appealed to me about my car was it retained a lot of its originality, and it's right down to the front fenders, and, you know, knock on wood, there still haven't been off the car yet.
Wild. Yeah, that's amazing.
Numbers matching and everything for a race car, which is really unusual. Yeah. So,
but I'm sorry. My question: did you know which dealership it was delivered at in Canada, or what part of Canada? What's
yeah,
or
absolutely.
Any of that
I stuff? Mean, all the paperwork's in a binder that I have. I don't remember off the top.
Oh,
of my
okay.
head. Yeah, I can tell you the VIN number.
No, I was only asking because our buddy up there in Canada is. There's Porsche Kelowna, which is right by where he lives.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Curious.
Well, you know, the dealership that sponsored it was Downtown Fine Cars, and I think they're still around, right?
Mm. Downtown Fine Cars. Do you know them?
I will in a moment.
Yeah, because one of the guys came up to the car at Sebring earlier this year and saw it when he saw it on the track with that on the windshield banner, which is all period original, same windshield and everything. So really kind of cool.
Because it's all original.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the ability to go racing with it, vintage racing, which I love to do, but with a car that still has this level of originality to it and unrestored, it's been very well maintained. And credit to the guys that run the car at Dossport Roll Bars. They look after everything on that car. And, I mean, I haven't missed a single session. Again, knock on wood, five race weekends into this, including 24-hour Classic at Daytona, 12-hour Classic at Sebring. Haven't missed a single session. And that's just outstanding.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is it 86?
88. Yeah. The first year they did the series, they were normally aspirated in 87. Okay. And then the turbos came along and they wanted to sell more of those, and so they made the series turbos. That started in 88, and that went from 88 to 89 into 90, and then that was the end of it. And so some of the cars carried on. Others, like mine, just did a little bit of the 88 season and then kind of went off into a private hands. And
didn't they do a 968 version of a – wasn't there a cup car? What did Pappas's yellow one? Was that what the hell was that thing?
Well, they went to the Carrera Cup after that.
That's
yeah, the 944 was kind of the grandfather because there was a German series, which was the first, and then there was the Canadian, the French came after that. So there were the three series, if you will, around the world. But then they, by the early 90s, they had to sell 964s, and so it became the Carrera Cup, which has got us where we are today with the, you know, number one selling race car in the world with the 911 GT3 Cup cars and the series. We have the North American Carrera Cup and all around the world. So, yeah, pretty big deal.
My favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great racing.
Yeah. It's like Porsche stock car stuff. I kind of dig it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's exactly what it is. And it was a great series to watch. You can go on YouTube and you can pull up all the races from 1988. Collins owns the rights to those now and put most every one of those races up on TV.
So we can watch your car going around? Well,
you can watch it getting lapped, because that's usually about the time it shows up on the camera.
Are you having better results with it than they did?
Yeah, well, yes, it's been good. It's been good. It's not as competitive then. So, I mean, all credit to the people back in the day. I mean, vintage racing is vintage racing. But, yeah, we have a lot of fun with it. Several podiums with it now. And you know, again, just to drive it at nighttime at Daytona, to drive it in the darkness at Sebring with all the other cars out on the track. I mean, it's an experience that you just have to get.
I don't know.
You have to feel. And it's just so awesome to be able to do.
You're more of a man than me, I think. Oh, that no, really, Sebring is too rough on my back, even just thinking about it, my back and neck hurt. And nighttime. Like, whenever that race comes on in the game, I skip it. I can't stand racing there at night. It's so hard.
Yeah, admittedly, you know, Daytona was my only prior experience to that. And 20 years ago, they didn't have the lights that they have now. But it was still relatively well lit. Still a stadium, if you will.
Right, and the infield doesn't have the lights that the track does. The
and so now, you know, but now the lights that are on the infield and everything are just, it's like daylight almost. So it's light outside, but it's not as light as daytime. But then you go to Sebring, and then you really understand, you know, what it must have been like back in the day, because at least now we have LED lights on the cars. Mm-hmm. Back then, you know, and I'm thinking like 962s and cars that were really hauling through there, because my lap times were off significantly in the dark. I mean, I'm older now and my eyesight isn't as good as it used to be. So it takes a bit to get used to it. And I think another thing you have to do in the daylight is you have to sort of count the corners, so that when you come through there in the dark, you know that when you turn, count to four, and then...
Goddamn right.
Yeah, I kind of forgot to do that.
I always think of it, it's so similar in a lot of ways, even though the layout's completely different, but Le Mans, I go to the Mulsanne straight. That's kind of a little bend where you sort of do a little bit of maneuvering. Yeah. There's nothing at the end of the straight at Sebring. There's nothing there. I mean, you got to make a hard U.
Yeah, you really do, under the bridge, turn 17, yeah. There's a couple of those, actually, with going the other directions. But
if you sneeze or you miscount or you're 1 second off on your braking, you're in the wrong place, son.
Yeah, yeah, and then you've got cars coming up behind you with lights, and, of course, the bouncing is making the lights.
I can't do it. I have a seizure in my car.
Yeah, it was really something. So, you know, I don't know that I need to do that again this year, but that was fun one time.
Okay, you got it under your belt. Yeah. I don't know how people race there every year, and they look forward to it.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, it is a fun track. You can really race people hard there, just like Daytona. Road Atlanta, of course, being the home track, have done that now more
than
anything.
One of my all-time favorites.
It's fun. Yeah, that track's got everything.
Do you play it on any Sims or in any video games or any kind of computer? Or you can race the real one so you don't have to?
Well, you know, we actually did that with a friend of mine has one in his garage, and we did that with Barber Motorsports Park before we went there for the first time, because it had been 20 years for me since I'd been there. And it really does help with the sight lines, you know, of what to look for, because that part shows up. Obviously, the sensation's not the same when you're just looking at a screen. But it really does help get just which direction the track's going. So, yeah, absolutely, it helps.
I do the same thing. But whenever I play Road Atlanta, I do the cut through the old track without the big And then it just plays to me like a big, fun Lime Rock. You know, we're just going around the woods,
It is. You're right.
And
it's
I'll like do 10, 20 laps like that and just sort of almost meditation on the game.
Yeah, you get into a zen-like flow with it. Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, you know, I did get to drive it before they put before they got rid of the kink. But when I look at the pictures of what Hurley and, you know, Vic Elford and those guys, Brian Redmond, what they raced that track like back in the 70s and 80s, when you look at how close the walls were to everything, and there was no runoff, and I was just, you just didn't miss the track.
There were no safety fences either. Nothing. It was just tire barriers everywhere.
Nothing. I mean, those guys are gladiators. Yeah.
Did you ever get into the Paramount Ranch racing or any of that history? It's from the 50s, because it only was open a couple years. But are you familiar with that at all? Because
there's
really
a lot
of Porsches.
Yeah, and I'm starting to see more and more of that now on social media.
It's so stinking fascinating. I went down a deep dive when I first found out about it, because it used to be the Paramount Ranch to us was, you go see the old Western town and you bring your kids there for a hike or a picnic or whatever. And I didn't really ever realize what it was, what we were driving on, and that it was actually a banked racetrack. And
you can still see elements of it there?
You can see most of it. You can still walk the entire track, but all of the elements are there. They're just broken up for municipality. And like the figure eight that used to go underneath, that's all kind of swampy now and whatever. But your point about these guys and the guys who were really doing it, I think back to that track specifically because it was killing people left and right and they couldn't wait to go get there and race. Oh, it's Herbie the Love Bug. And, you know, the whole Herbie the Love Bug. That's the racetrack from Herbie the Love Bug. And a few of the Herbies, I think, as a matter of fact. But they're throwing the cars around. There's no safety gear. I don't even think they had lap belts.
No, that
they
was
had from, helmets and goggles, but that's not going to do anything.
Yeah, I think the goggles were to keep the wind out of your eyes.
Exactly, and dust.
Right, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the you wanted to get thrown from the car because you didn't want the car to land on you. So, I mean, if you got – and you, there's some photos of that. I mean, you see that famous shot of the not a 550, but it's one of the successors to that car where it's flying through the air in Germany. One, I think it was Solitude or one of those tracks where it left the track. It was a bank corner and it left the track. And you see the guy flying. He, you know, survives that. I mean, just, yeah.
It's crazy those days.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait to get out there. The James Deans of it all, you know.
Yeah. You know, when Cam and I were doing the podcast through COVID, we talked about the Targa Florio on that anniversary of that 1970 win that Porsche had. And as I researched into that, what that 45-mile lap was like around, you know, that island, that Italian countryside, and in Sicily, I mean, just these guys that did this, I mean, you know, Vic Elford tested a 917 for a lap around there, 45 miles around the hillside, the countryside, I should say. The 917, and I mean, it determined that, you know, no, that's really not the best tool for that the 908, you know, is. And but when you think about those guys, I said to Cam at that point, you know, being born in 1970, I'm just kind of like, think it's kind of cool that I was actually born into a world where gladiators like that existed. That would actually, they were doing that in 1970 and 71 and 72. I think 73 was the last official year with that kind of craziness. But, yeah, I mean, that's the world we live in or came from. And it's very cool because it's, I don't know, there's something about it. Of course, we are the people that rode, the kids that rode in the back of station wagons looking out the rear window, right?
And
moved without seat belts. So.
You better believe it. I mean, we used to throw snowballs at cars and all that horrible shit. Not
that's
okay.
Right.
It's not okay.
No. Do not do this at home.
Don't smoke, kids.
Yeah, don't do this at home. Anyway, so vintage racing, you know, gives you a chance to kind of like get into a little taste of that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're out there, obviously, at Daytona and what have you, but put us in decade groups. So we're out there with the 962s. 944 showroom stock cars never raced with 962s on the track. But to have one go around you on the high banking and just watch that, you know, and they're careful with what you're doing and aware of your space and everything. It's just the best seat in the house.
Mm.
It really is. Best way to watch that.
Mm. I can't imagine being there at the time, you know, in period.
Yeah, yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
All right, well, one of the cars you guys sold was this very cool PCA car. We talked at length about it on the phone the other day. You can go down.
You could
give a list for why that car is worth what was paid for it. But it was finally released today. Who bought it? You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, you know, yesterday was the delivery of the car. We sold the car. If I back up a little bit, if I may.
Please.
Because we did talk about it on the phone. We didn't talk about it here. But the Porsche Club did a program with Porsche Classic, I want to say like 2011, I think it was, where they had restored a 1972 911 Targa. And then it belonged to the club, so they raffled it, and somebody won the car at Porsche Parade. And so fast forward many years, and the Porsche Club and Porsche Classic and Porsche AG, there's a relationship there. You know, the Ferry Porsche used to go to all the parades starting back in the mid-1950s, and so the Porsche family has been always very involved. The Porsche Club.
They're like supporting the fan club almost, right?
Yeah, Porsche Club of America, to be specific.
Right.
You know, this is one of the earliest markets. What made Porsche success was here in the U.S. It really helped grow it. And they always recognize it. The family always recognize it. So the Porsche Club of America and Porsche have always had a very close relationship.
Mm.
So when it came time to do another special project back in 2019, I believe it was when this started, the idea was to sort of bring all the dreams to the table of, you know, what would you want to build? And Vu Nguyen, you know, being the executive director of the club, is a 996 fan. He says, well, you know, the 996 doesn't really get a lot of love, so what if we did something with that car? And that, when you start evolving the conversation from there, when you start getting the designers involved, in this case, Grant Larson, father of the Boxster, the Carrera GT, and many other special projects, you know, the idea came up, what if there would have been a predecessor to the 997 Sport Classic, the car that we never got here in the United States, but had a lot of the classic elements in the design of it, hence the name, like the ducktail and the Fuchs wheels and a double bubble in the roof and things of that nature. And
even
so
the color scheme is on point. They're very similar.
Yeah, yeah, they are. And in this case, so they brought that to the 996 and started to sketch out what ideas could look like. And the interior, very special. So that a lot of handiwork went into the design and then the build of the car. So when it came time to sell the car, that's kind of where the 75th anniversary came in. It was 5 years ago that we had Project Gold, and this was coming up timing-wise.
Wow, that was five years ago.
I know. Can you believe it?
No.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Congrats.
Yeah.
Gee whiz. That's crazy.
So the idea was that they would sell the car through the auction with Broad Arrow Group, because we were hosting the 75th anniversary auction at the Porsche Experience Center in Atlanta. So the timing just kind of, all these things just kind of came together. It wasn't scripted this way from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. It just kind of all came together. And then, as I understand it, the proceeds of that will go out to the club, and they have the different regions, and they kind of figure out how that all works out from a benefit standpoint.
Wow, no kidding. But that'll actually filter out back down to the clubs?
I believe so.
How cool.
Yeah, so a little bit different setup that way. But when you look at the time that went into the car, you know, someone made a comment to me after the auction of the car, you know, wow, that was really crazy money for a 996. But
I think a lot of people were saying that.
Yeah, so okay, it's not, because I think it's actually really inexpensive when you think about what was paid for it, but you look at the work that was done by Porsche, you know, a vehicle manufacturer that does this process for cars that are going to be reproduced in the thousands. You know, they're going to make a lot of 911s every year, and they make a lot of Boxsters and Caymans and Panameras and what have you. They did this same process for a one-of-one car, and that is, you know, not only the design, but the testing of it. That's the part that a lot of people don't see, is that, you know, you just don't change a sunroof car and put a double bubble roof in it without going through a lot of testing and making sure structurally everything, you know, works the way it's supposed to work. Take the ducktail, for example, on the back of the car. The aerodynamics, when you do a GT3 aero kit on the car, which is pretty much what the nose is and down the side, but when you change that, instead of have the wing on the back, now you have a ducktail. You don't just change that for the sake of styling. It has to work, right? And so there's a responsibility.
You're changing the physics of what's happening at that point, right?
Yeah, so, but that doesn't affect just the aerodynamics. So they had to test that in the wind tunnel at Weissau with a mule car, which in this case was a car from the museum. They took a They took a car out of the museum while they're doing the restoration work on the classic club coupe. They put a ducktail on a car from the museum, put it in the wind tunnel, and tested it. But then you're not done yet, because, you know, aerodynamics affect the suspension. So you don't think just put a GT3 power plant in this car. It was started out life as just a regular Carrera, but the Porsche Club wanted a GT3 power plant in there and transmission. So, you know, you do all that, but now you're affecting the suspension too. So that has to all be tested. And the testing for that was done at Nardo in Italy, and as well as Idiota in Spain. Yeah, for one car.
Spared no expense.
For one car. That's the Sunderwunsch program, right? You dream it, they'll build it. Yeah, so
whoa.
So that's it. So when you start to look at all that behind-the-scenes work that's happening, and that's before the car even is done and gets here to the United States, and now it has to go through all the certification process for that, right?
Did they have to federalize it?
Everything.
No.
I mean, it started out life as a 99-911, which, you know, has a VIN number that was imported to the United States. There's no problem there, because it's the same car in that respect.
But it has a GT3 motor now.
Right. So you have to go through all the stickers in the doors and everything that are in that has to all be certified. That car came out here to California. Yeah, it passed here in California. It came through and went through all the testing. Right. And then had to be imported again for everything to be done. Yeah. So it's amazing. So, again, when you think about that, how many bespoke manufacturers or restorers of cars, they're not held to that same level that Porsche is.
All of a sudden, it just became cheap the way you
describe
it.
Don't you think?
Well, the way you describe it.
So this is what we did yesterday. So the new owner, the winning bidder of the car from the auction, took delivery at Porsche Parade yesterday. You know, it was more of a private ceremony between the executive board, the people that were involved in the program, right? Those involved in the program, It was more of a smaller affair in that respect, if you will. And one of the last questions was, do you mind the world knowing, you know, that you're its new caretaker? And Jerry said, no, that's fine.
Johnny Cabiglio posted a picture at the gas station this morning, and I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. Okay, great.
right.
And then a little bit later, yours came through, yeah. And then obviously well, some I only other did ones
it.
As well.
That's right. I only posted it after the Porsche Club posted it because, mm-hmm. you know, for, it's their car. It's, you know, I think they have the right to say it first. But without a doubt, Jerry is the is an outstanding caretaker of dreams. There's no question about it. What you learn from a guy like him, the way that he shares his cars and talks about them, that's what I mean about an excellent caretaker, because it helps the rest of us understand and learn all about it. So we're thrilled. I mean, again, we are thrilled. None of us had any idea who the next caretaker would be or what it would even sell for. Now, that's a no-reserve auction. It, you know, could have sold for the opening bid, or it could have sold for what it did or more.
What was the final hammer?
I think it all came down to 1.27.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think 5 years was all ago, you could get a 996 for $5,000.
Yeah, I think
I bought the cheapest 996 in the country. There was a lot of those videos.
Yeah. Well, you know, this one started out like that. But
no, it wasn't like that. I thought it was.
No.
Was it a ratty car to begin
really
with?
Was. Yeah.
I guess that makes the most sense.
Yeah, you can actually go in Porsche newsroom. You know, Porsche posted about this in the newsroom as the car was released. Now, a year ago at Amelia Island, it made its debut to the public. And it's kind of traveled around since to some shows and what have you. But there's some pictures up there of the black 1999 911 coupe.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it wouldn't even roll straight. Vu will tell you a wonderful story about it. Maybe you should have him on sometime.
Crabbing a little bit?
Yeah.
I'd love to have Vu on. I think he's doing his own thing now.
They do. They do a wonderful podcast, too.
And they're in, is it Ohio?
Maryland.
Maryland, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
There's a couple people want to say hello to you. Tony Ooh. Roger Fishman from Telefunken in Connecticut says, hi, Ray.
Hey, hello.
Thank you for the Auto Kennel. Hi, Ray. It's been too long. Hi, Jay and Nicole. We'll miss you guys, but wish you good times and vibes on your driving adventure.
Yeah.
So this is interesting because we don't normally get to see you but once a year, and we're seeing you now, and then hopefully we'll see you in a couple weeks.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, that'll be great. Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
When you come through Atlanta, you cannot go to the Porsche Experience Center without me. I have to be there with you.
Well, we were just saying that. We didn't really want to go without you. So I was thinking maybe we could meet for coffee or breakfast or lunch or whatever there.
I would love that. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and then you can show us around because we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, I've walked around that place a few times.
Are you familiar at least with some of the hallways? We've flown into that airport. I think that's all I've ever done.
I got to tell you, though, I mean, they just opened the expansion of it. They did the grand opening of the West Track, which is the expansion of the track. But also Porsche Classic now has their new factory restoration headquarters there. We made some films on a few of the cars that were sold at the Broad Arrow auction for the Porsche 75th anniversary. And the Porsche Classic was kind enough to let us use their media room in there to do these walk around videos on the car, if you will. There's actually a funny story on the one, too, if I may.
Please. And Jay Franzi says you're a great guest.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, worlds kind of had a way of colliding at the Porsche 75th anniversary auction. There were two consignments in there that I was involved in, the Coca-Cola 962, which is part of my origin story, I feel like, as a Porsche guy. And Harris Snodgrass's 1974 911 Carrera that had been in the Brumos collection from back when I, you know, worked there started over 20 years ago. And so both of these cars were coming up for sale, and we made two walk-around videos on both cars. In the case of the 74 Carrera, I showed up the morning that we were going to do the shoot. And this, you appreciate this because you know how to produce things, right? But I don't. So I show up and like, okay, we're gonna talk about this car, and I'm going to talk about Bob Snodgrass, because if you knew Bob and you knew what a detailed guy he was and how much he loved Porsche, then you would understand when he chose a car to go into the Brumos collection how special that car was. Mm-hmm. This is a about 25,000-mile original 74 Carrera. I mean, it is like the perfect example of how the car came out of the factory. And, you know, that meant a lot to him that the car would be original like that. And so, I wanted to explain who Bob was. So as I said to Ashton, who was the producer, director of the film, it was just him with one camera and me. That was the production. And he did an amazing job. He said to me, okay, well, what photos and video do you have for me to support everything you're going to say about Bob Snodgrass? And I said, well, I could go back home and probably, you know, dig up a few things. How much time do I have? You know, and he's like, yeah, I kind of like need it right away. If you're going to talk about it, I need to have something because you don't make a film without visuals. Mm. Right. I'm like, oh, yeah, kind of need that. So so he said, all right, so we have to talk about something else then. And so we kind of started getting into this, you know, well, how am I going to do this? And so I started Googling 1974 and like, okay, what was going on in 1974? And the hit songs kind of started popping up on that. And one of them was Memories by Barbra Streisand. Or The Way We Were. The Way We Were is the title of the song by Barbra Streisand.
Everyone knows the Memories.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, and I thought to myself, no, that's actually perfect because that's what this car is all about. It's all about like how things were, the way we were in 1974. Mm. This car represents that. Okay, when you put it into a collection, that's what this car represents. So like that'll be our angle. That's what we'll talk about, right? So we started the whole video about this thing about, you know, looking at the brochure, because the brochure car, which happened to be in the glove box of this car, is an orange 74 Carrera right on the cover of the book, right? That came in the showroom. And there's the car. That's what we're talking about. So I'm like, okay, that's the deal. It's like these books are great for memories, but there's nothing like having this right in front of you to remind you of the way things were, right?
Whoa, look at you.
There we go. So that was the video, right? So we make this video. we put it out.
It's all...
We put this out. And one of the things about an auction company is that we all work remotely, okay? So all of my colleagues, great people like, you know, Alexander Weaver, Ramsey Potts, David Swig, you know,
Ramsey.
Yeah, Ramsey. Ian Keller, you know, Alan Scooter, all these great people. I only see them on Zoom calls. You know, it's like we work for a podcast because we only see each other on Zoom calls until we actually get to a live event. Okay.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, like Amelia, everybody shows up at Amelia, or here in this case, the Experience Center to do the Porsche sale.
I don't know if I knew that. You guys don't have an office you go to.
There are offices around, like the Garage and Social. I know. Jacob Greason and Caroline Cassini, they have their office in the Culver City Garage and Social.
Yes, upstairs. That's what I was thinking of. We love it over there.
Yeah, and so, you know, we can certainly do that, and I could work from them today if I wanted to, but no, I work from home office.
I'd rather be here.
I'd rather be here. Yeah.
Of course.
All right, so... so anyway, so the point of this whole thing is... We get together at the Experience Center. We're ready to have our first meeting, and we go in to sit down. Everybody's in there, and Alan Squindo, who's the chief operating officer, the first thing he says, he looks at me, and he says, well, Ray, he said, I think that might be the first car video ever to reference Barbra Streisand. So there you go.
Significantly, too. That's funny.
So I thought that was good.
That's funny. At a car event we often go to, she's sometimes there having breakfast her husband, James Brolin.
You'll have to tell next time you see her. You'll have to tell her that there is now a car video that references her hit song from 1974, "The Way We Were."
I will. I'll tell her, and she'll be like, "Broad Arrow, what?" I'll be like, "He used to work at Porsche. It's a whole thing.
It's a long story." Watch the video.
How are things going at Broad Arrow Group?
It's going well.
Okay, good.
It's going really well. I mean, it's a lot of people say, "Why would you leave Porsche?" You know, 25 years. I have to say, it doesn't feel at all like I've left Porsche. I was just working with my former colleagues, and we were doing the judging for the Oregonelli.
You were at your old place of business.
We were working there. I mean, it's just, I still live 15 minutes down the street. I feel like I get the best of both worlds now because I get to do everything. And I'm so fortunate for that because I'm not only my car specialist with Broad Arrow, but I'm also brand ambassador for Broad Arrow Group Auctions as well as Hagerty Marketplace. Mm. And so there's just a lot of ground to cover. I love it. You know, my background is in retail car sales, and connecting fantastic people with fascinating cars is just what I've always loved doing.
Yeah.
And you meet the neatest people. I mean, like what we did yesterday, you know, you just meet the neatest people. And you don't have to be famous to be a fantastic person, by the way, as you well know. There's a lot of amazing people in our community. Yeah.
Sometimes the other way around.
Yeah. So that part for me is wonderful. And I love the travel. So it's really the best of both worlds for me. So I'm enjoying the heck out of it.
I'm so happy to hear that. We've talked a lot over the years, and I knew you weren't going to retire at Porsche just because you wanted to do other things. There was more things in this world you wanted to do. But I was very surprised when you actually made the move. And then when I saw and heard what the move was, I wasn't even a little. It just made the most sense.
Yeah, it really does.
Was the decision even difficult for you?
Well, you know, you do go through a process, because, I mean, I will admit, 25 years of something, you start to identify, you know, yourself and a lot of what you do around that. And it is hard to think, you know, what is my email address going to look like without that on there? Or just how do you even introduce
of other people too?
It is. I mean, so that takes, in your own mind, that takes a while to settle. And it's still a little odd. I will be at a dinner or an event like we just were this week, and I'll still say we when I'm talking about what Porsche is doing. I mean, it just doesn't get out of your system that quickly. And I don't necessarily want it to. I mean, so many great people in that company. And, you know, the people that I've worked with when I was at Porsche, the people at Brumos, and the people that were at Hagerty, we had a partnership with them at Porsche and would do a lot of events together. You just get a sense of what the people are like inside the company. Mm-hmm. They're all car people. Mm. I mean, that's the connection that you get. I mean, we just are very fortunate that we get to work within that as a profession. So,
Mike, did you say something?
I didn't. Everything just cut out and cut back in again for a second there, so that might be what you heard.
You want me to start over?
Oh, yeah, from the beginning.
Did you miss the Barbra Streisand story? Do I need to start over?
No. Got that one. I want to see pictures of the 944.
Hey, Mike, do you have anything for Ray here? I think this is maybe the first time that we're all on the show together.
Yeah, I want to see pictures of the 944. I love 944 Ooh. Porsches.
They are good looking, aren't they? I mean, they have that long nose, short deck deal, and I mean, kind
of
just
I look at a 944 Porsche, and it reminds me of a time and place in my life. It is so unique. You know, a Pontiac Fiero does the same thing.
Interesting.
There are different cars that do that. The 944 is certainly one that does that for me.
He's got a Fiero too.
No kidding.
Oh, boy. And yes, but before we get into that, did you just say Porsche?
Uh-oh.
I don't think so. I think it might have been a cut. I said Porsche, I believe.
Oh, okay, good, Ooh. Good. I just want to make sure. I thought I heard it as one syllable. Yeah. Can't let you slide on that one, especially now that you're going to give me a hard time about a Pontiac.
That dealership was in downtown Toronto, by the way.
There you go. Yeah, downtown fine cars.
Yep.
I'm going to see if I can pull up the Instagram here, and then we'll look at Ray's.
I have posted a number of photos
beautiful
over the time.
944.
Over time. Yes. Yeah, I mean, the design of it, of course, then as a race car, the series was sponsored by Rothmans. And, of course, as a kid, I mean, the Rothmans Porsche was a 956 and then a 962. So to legitimately have a Porsche that is supposed to say Rothmans on the side of it, like this one does, I mean, it's close as I'm ever going to get to that 962. Mm-hmm. It's still a red turbo Porsche, and, you know, it still came from the same racing division, which I think is really cool. And, you know, even the street 944s, as you were saying, the design of the car, you know, the flip-up headlights, it's so 80s. You know, the whole Radwood era thing that's going on right now, I mean, it fits that perfectly. It does. And the fact that they raced on the phone dial wheels instead of the Fuchs wheels, the magnesium phone dial wheels, the street cars, you know, had the heavier wheels. They just, you know, they look so period proper to me. I just love it. I really do. And of course, we've upgraded the safety equipment and what have you, but some of the things that are on the car are a real advantage. You remember the 944 was the first car to have ABS in the model line. Well, that came in handy at the MIDI recently at Road Atlanta, because we had a very rainy Sunday morning race, and to have ABS on a car, wow, on a vintage car, that is a nice feature. So.
I'm sorry to make you keep talking there. I was trying to sign into my own Instagram, but apparently I don't know my own password, so I can't do that. So maybe I'll just...
I have to look up mine.
What would I Google to try to find your car?
Yeah, I think you could put in there, if you went to... if you just type in 1988 Porsche 944 Turbo Cup, I think you're going to probably get photos from the... maybe from the period.
Perfect. Yeah, you're right. So I think we'll just do this. There we go.
Do I get to see it? Oh, yeah, look at that.
Bring that up.
Yeah, so that car also was consigned at the auction and sold. That car.
What number was yours? Could I find yours by number?
Yeah, my car is number 55.
Oh,
it actually
very
looks
nice.
A lot like that number 88 car. right there, except it says 55 on the front fender. the numbers are different.
I don't understand, Ray. Explain it to me a little slower.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Here we go.
Okay, so that's from last fall when I first got the car, and I'm actually looking at the medal that they give you, thinking, oh wow, I actually.
Oh, that's literally you! Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow, I actually got a medal.
Yeah, it won't let me get into Insta. Oh, there we go. Beautiful.
There you go. Is that it?
That's cool. Gosh, that's cool.
Isn't that a good-looking car?
Are you kidding? Awesome. The white phone dials do it for me.
I know. They look so good. And the car just has such a great stance to it and everything.
And all the blanks for, like, the fog lights and stuff? Or is that just red tape over?
It's just red tape, but we've actually since then opened it up so it breathes better and then mounted the LED lights behind that because...
Oh, I see.
At some point, the headlight motors and headlights were taken out for weight savings. And... Yeah, so it actually doesn't have flip-up headlights. The doors are there, but they don't flip up anymore. So now it has LED lights underneath. But these are cars that, you know, again, there were a total for the world was around 200 cars between the German, French, and Canadian series that were built. How many of those 200 survive today? I don't know. There were 38 of them that were made for the Canadian series. And, you know, there's a number of those that are out there. Yeah, so this particular one, this number 88, this car never actually raced in the series. It was there. It was built in that serial number stretch that they had. But the car was never actually used in the series. And so the dealership sold it to a local doctor who drove it very sparingly. And then after that kind of went into a collection. And so that car today, the way that it was at the auction, and that was me driving it at Homestead earlier this year where we did a shakedown with it. That car is just, it is a time capsule of what it was like when they left the factory racing department in 1988. Or actually would have been December of 87, I think.
Gosh, it's ridiculously
kilometers cool. On the speed dial?
What's that?
Kilometers on the speedometer?
Yeah, they were Canadian, yeah. Canadian cars.
So, yeah. KPH, cool.
Yeah. So it's so good looking. And so that.
Yeah, just the stance is all right, too. I mean, they really just...
Mm-hmm. And the Canadian cars, you know, when they did with the first test, a few of the executives that were in the sales department at Porsche Cars Canada went to the track to see the cars for the first time. And when they were running around in the test session, they didn't make much noise because they had the factory exhaust system on the car.
Oh.
You know, it was all, remember the 944 again was one of the first world cars with the catalyst and everything. So they made a decision at that point in time to get a sponsorship from a different muffler company so that they could make a racing exhaust for the car.
Oh,
and so these 38 cars actually make a little bit better sound than the ones that ran in Germany or France.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, and they sound awesome.
This is a great shot of the dashboard, so I'm just going to zoom in here for other people to see what we were talking about earlier.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
This right here, follow the cursor right there, is how you reset the tripometer.
Because the other
this
ones
over here,
yeah, the other ones that are up there, those are the ones that you move to adjust, right?
Exactly.
And then there's the slider up and down to shut off the
flow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you push this in right here where the cursor is, and that's how you reset your odometer. And it was a bit before I realized it. I think I don't think I took it to the dealership, but I think I had to ask somebody.
Yeah.
I don't think I found it.
It's a good looking dashboard. I mean, even today, the design. I loved it. Aside from the lack of the iPad that's would, you know, normally today be stuck on top of the dashboard.
ruining it. For me, it was a 4-gauge. You know, they did the 3s and the 5 gauges. And I was like, oh, this is like the new Carrera dash, but it's 4-gauge. It was pretty cool because they hit a bunch of gauges in there. There was a boost and a bunch of stuff.
But, I mean, do you remember back in the time? This is like similar to the conversation that Pete and I had when we were talking about the 914 and the anniversary. That if you put yourself... And I can really relate to this now, as I'm sure maybe you can now too. But back then we were talking about, and Jeff Swart, I think, also mentioned this, but the person...
Who?
Jeff Swart, right?
Just kidding. Legend Jeff Swart.
Your friend Jeff Swart who bought a 914 back in the day, 914.6.
The best.
Yeah. You know, at that point in time, the 911 was an older product, and the 914 was seen as the newer generation, younger person's car.
Mm-hmm.
And I specifically kind of remember feeling that way in the mid-80s when the 944 was out there and they updated the car and the turbo came along, because that was what most road tests of the magazines were doing. They were sort of saying, you know, for less money, here's the same performance. You get a 944 turbo and you had the same performance as you would have with a 911 Carrera for less money,
Right? If anything, it was faster.
But it was also a newer design. You know, the ergonomics of it, the air conditioning system, you know, the balance of the chassis, all of that was a newer design at the time.
It wasn't universally loved either, though.
No, it wasn't, which is why they're rare today.
Oh, well, you know what? That's a really good point.
Right?
Yeah. If everybody loved them, they would have bought them, and there would be tons of them around.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So think about it. How many Carrera RS 2.7s did they make, right? 1,500? Something like that? Yeah, I think the number's around 1,500. Initially, it was supposed to be 500, and then they did a few more runs. Yeah. So I think it's 1,500 was the number. And what did I say? How many turbo cups did they make?
37, 34? Oh, was there that many?
200 for the world, 38 or so for Canada. So, I mean, I think in my mind, from a generational standpoint, I mean, obviously it's not the same as a Carrera 2.7, but I think spiritually, it for the kids of the 80s, I think these cars are kind of that.
Mm. Interesting.
Long pause.
No, I like it. I like to think about the things you say because you give me new perspectives. I just know that it's a car that when I first get in, I was disappointed because it didn't feel like what I expected it to feel like, even back then in 1997. Mine was 10 years old when I got it, 11 years old, 86 and a half. But I told you the story personally. I got in a fight with my girlfriend or whatever happened. I drove home from the mall really angry. And that car showed me what it had. And I was totally surprised. I wasn't manhandling it previously. I was kind of just taking it easy. And at that point is when I started taking it up to Lime Rock because the car itself was so stinking capable. I feel like a lot of people either put them in the garage and didn't put miles on them or raced them and wrecked them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they didn't wreck them, they've wrecked whatever the car was by raking it a race car.
Yeah.
It seems like, is that another reason they might be rare?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, it's, the lower the price point of something, they kind of pass through this ownership phase where by the time the third or fourth owner gets the car, how they maintain it, where they keep it, you know, that type of thing can drop off. And it's typical. I mean, you saw it with the 944, you saw it with the 914s first. You know, and then the 944s, and now we see that with Boxsters, right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it's just a cyclical thing.
Yeah, which is why, speaking of Boxsters, we had this 1,200-mile 97 Boxster, which was the silver with the red interior, which was the brochure car. Mm. We had one of those consigned.
The prototype colors.
Yeah,
really.
Actually, from the show car and everything. I mean, this car was so, like, new. I mean, even the steering wheel, even with 1,200 miles on it, it still felt like it just came out of the factory and the gear shift knob and everything. And it was just an amazing example. And it sold for $42,000 at the auction, which is not bad considering most of them sell for $7,000 or so, you know, in that range nowadays.
Still less than I would have thought, though.
Yeah, I thought if anything had a chance to set a world record, you know, that could have been that car. But I just don't think too many people right now are getting a collection of Boxsters together.
Yeah.
I did an exhibit one point in the Heritage Gallery at the PEC when we introduced the 718s, and we wanted to have every generation of Boxster there, and there just wasn't any one person that had all that. Like, you know, if you want an RS collection or something, or GT3s, you're probably going to find somebody on Instagram that's got that collection, but I just don't know of anybody that has that yet with a Boxster.
No, that's interesting, isn't it?
And you should, because I think it's an amazing car. I mean, obviously, it's a lot of fun to drive.
I ripped one of those Spiders the other day, and that is...
They're sweet.
It's a lot of car, yeah. I see why everyone's buying them. I didn't really get it until driving it. You kind of have to drive it.
Yeah. But
it's
I think
pretty special.
Love for Porsche, I mean, at least as measured in auction results from the 75th anniversary sale a couple of weeks ago, was very strong. So, you know, it was 64 cars, I believe, was the number that ran across the block, and... the sell-through rate was in the mid-80s, which is outstanding. I think 93% if you count the memorabilia.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was
really
awesome.
Holy crap, that's amazing.
And about 20 million, I think, was the total number.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I would assume the Broad Arrow people would be happy with that.
Yeah, well, yeah, it exceeded expectations.
Great.
So, yeah, very happy with that. Now we look forward to Monterey, which is coming up, and hopefully a chance to come back out. And I'm not sure if you guys will be where you'll be traveling
at
that point.
We hope we'll be up there for Monterey reasons that we'll hope to speak about in the future.
I look forward to that. So, absolutely. So, yeah, lots to do in that case. But before we shift off the Porsche topic, I did bring you something.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to share with you.
Okey-doke.
May I share this with you now?
Sure.
So, one of the wonderful people that I had a chance to meet when I worked at Brumos was the late Peter Schutz, and who was the CEO of Porsche, who is best known for saving the 911 from extinction, making the decision to keep it in production after it had already been decided that it was going to go out of production, and the 911 SC was supposed to be the end of the road.
The 928 was going to take its place. The internal plan.
That's exactly right, yeah. And getting to know Peter through the time period was just amazing because he was such a people person. In fact, the famous story when Ferry Porsche interviewed him and they sat down together because Peter was running, I think it was Cummings Diesel. He was a diesel engineer. Ferry Porsche, you know, made him the job offer, and Peter said to him, you know, I don't understand why you want me. I'm a diesel engineer. I don't know anything about sports cars. I'm not a sports car guy. And Ferry Porsche told him, he said, well, at that point in time, Porsche didn't have an engineering problem. They had a people problem. And he understood people, and he was a real amazing person when it came to letting talent do its thing. Yeah. And so his book, which he wrote,
oh, wow,
The Driving Force, about extraordinary results with ordinary people. Well, I think if he would have had the chance to meet you two, I would think that he would recognize that you are extraordinary people. And so I want you to have a chance to read his own words and some of his inside stories at Porsche and how they managed to accomplish what they did. His daughter, Lori, was at parade. She manages the historical car selection for the Porsche Club of America, and she signed the inside of the book for you.
Oh, my goodness.
With a famous quote that her father said, which is,
"Cars don't win races, people do."
And his father made that point in Le Mans in 1981, and that's how the book opens. So I hope you enjoy that, because I think if you had a chance to meet him, I think the three of you would get along famously.
And you wrote something beautiful that's akin to what you just said here. That's very lovely. Thank you. Believe me, it's mutual. Your friendship means the world to us as
well. Love you guys.
You're very thoughtful,
Ray
Schaefer.
So
thoughtful.
Oh, thank you.
Where is this available? People should buy this book.
I think we used to have it in the Brumos Collection boutique at the dealership, but I think now if you go on Amazon, probably the publisher, you can find it in there. It's an outstanding book. It really is.
We're excited to finally see Jacksonville and that area. You know, I mean, we haven't been down there.
Absolutely. You need to go to the Brumos Collection. We need to make sure. Let me know, and we'll see if we can give a call to Hurley and have him meet you
there.
It's another guy you need to meet. He's so wonderful.
It would be great.
I'm sure haven't talked to Sean as much as you have. I mean,
yes, but we've never actually had Hurley. Hurley was going to come do the show at one point when he was in town, and he ended up getting sick and not coming to town. Mm. Something happened, and you know, as life is, and we just, it hasn't happened again.
Yeah.
Would love to meet him. And I mean, just to be among those cars at the Brumos Collection is going
no
to
doubt.
Be great.
Well, we'll talk offline, because I think as you make your way through Florida, there's a number of people you probably need to see, visit.
There certainly are. We won't have time to do it all. It's going to be one of those things. But yes, there are definitely a lot of people we want to see. Brian Chaney is one of them as well down there. I think he's in South Orlando.
Yep, the dealership down there.
Thank you for this. That is so thoughtful. You really are very, very thoughtful. Stinking Ray Schaefer. Good grief.
You know, I mean, thinking back on my previous...
Get you anything.
No, you've got me everything, trust me. But thinking back on the previous visits, I usually would have the Originale with me from Porsche Classic.
Oh,
but
that's right.
Yeah, but I now have to say to Jonathan Sieber, the fellow that runs Porsche Classic, I say, you got to keep me in the loop now, because I'm not there every day to pick it up.
But do we have them all? We've got five: blue, red, yellow, brown, and green. That's all of them? I think so.
Yeah, I think we need to get you updated on another one.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll work on that.
COVID happened. You used to bring them every year, and
that's
you used
right.
to hand them to me with both hands, as you're supposed to. It's the proper way.
That's right. It's like when you have a beer and you say cheers, right? If you have to look.
You're supposed to look
in
the
eye.
That's right.
I learned that from my German colleagues. I didn't know
they
that
also
before.
Say you're not supposed to cheers without booze, and I don't have any booze anymore, so it's kind of like, go fuck yourself, whatever, I don't care, whatever you want to do. To each their own. Life. Is there anything that we haven't covered that we wanted to? I'm excited that we're going to see you again, so I don't feel the need to shove it all
in. Yeah, I am too.
Also, you know, the other thing is we're going to do this from the road somehow with some version of something, probably just one iPhone and a couple of microphones, but maybe we'll, if it's a Tuesday or a Thursday when we see you, maybe we'll do that too.
Okay. I'd be up for that.
Is there anything we should mention professionally, plug-wise? Is there anything we just didn't get to or we should get to?
Well, I mean, like if I have the opportunity to say it, then of course I would say, you know, Monterey is coming up.
Please.
We do consign cars for that. It's not too late. It's getting very close, but BroadArrowAuctions.com, and of course you can always connect with me on that. And then Haggerty Marketplace, which is a 24/7 online auction with Haggerty Power to see the sale through from start to finish, to give you protection inside there that isn't typical of that type of platform usually. So yeah, we're working on a lot of fun things there, and reason to go back and scroll and look at cars and have fun. So
you must love
it. Oh, I love it. I do.
I mean, you must really love
really
it.
Really do. I love cars.
You always kind of were doing something where you loved getting up every day and going to work and doing it. It wasn't as necessarily a grind for you.
No. No, I never wanted to do that. I have an aversion to that type of work. So.
I can
relate.
You. I get
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
I get you. Right. See you at the office.
All right.
Gosh, Ray Schaefer, we just stinking love you, man. It's really all it comes down to.
Thank you. Love you
so
guys,
so happy
too.
You're here.
Thank you for having me, as always. I appreciate it.
Congrats on everything you've been doing. I mean, it's like a lot. You've really accomplished
a
lot in the
past. It's an honor and a pleasure. There's no doubt about it. And we're just getting started.
Do you feel good about it? Do you ever take stock, though, and think, man, that was good. That was good.
I do. I mean, like, real quick, like I said, standing there at the auction, I looked up at one point, and the Coca-Cola 962 was coming across the block with Bobby Aiken driving it. And I looked up in the window, and I saw my mom and dad up in the they came. They don't usually get out and travel much in Atlanta traffic, but they made it a point to come down, so they were watching from up there, and I looked over and I saw Harris Snodgrass with the orange 911 that, you know, between his dad and Bob Aiken, the emotion kind of hit me about all these people that, you know, help you along the way. Again, people that get you to where you are. You never do anything alone. And I mean, it was kind of an emotional moment just looking at what was there in front of me at that point and thinking, if it weren't for these amazing people, I wouldn't be standing here right now with this feeling.
And you've got a good, grateful head on your shoulders. Good guy, Ray Schaefer. Good guy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're going to see you in a couple weeks in Atlanta, and then we're going to see you in a couple months in Monterey.
I look forward to it.
Oh, so good. Let's see. What are we doing? Thank you for being here. Follow Ray Schaefer at it's ray.schaefer on Instagram. Is that right?
It is.
And then anywhere else?
Well, LinkedIn and Facebook, but really Instagram is kind of where, you know, direct messages are so easy to do that.
It is. And people can do consignments to you. They can get a hold of you that way
absolutely.
Too, right?
Yeah, buy
start
and sell.
The conversation
mm-hmm.
there.
Sure. Happy to help.
Is there a certain amount, like does a car have to be a certain dollar value to be of interest to Broad Arrow, or is it a certain level of collectability?
You know, it's a mix, and the auction managers really decide that. Because when you open up the catalog, whether it's digital or print, or you're sitting there and the cars are coming across, there needs to be a level of, you know, entertainment. You don't want three of the same thing coming across at the same time. It's not good for the market. It's not entertaining. All type of things.
Right.
So yeah, it gets managed for sure. But I don't make those decisions.
Okay.
You know, if it's interesting to me, kind of thing.
But these are the things that other people ask. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
It's a great question.
My car is only worth $50,000. Would you guys be interested? You're talking
it's
about $1 million.
It's a great question. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So just send Ray a message. He'll set you straight.
We love it all.
Tomorrow we're going to be at GVBC, and then that's it. GVBC is up at Plan B. Where are we? Here we are. We're over here. Plan B. Site B. Sounds better. Site B. See you at Site B. Mill Creek Summit. And Saturday we will be up in the mountains again for something not public. We'll be up in the mountains again, and we'll post about it later. And then Sunday we're going to hit the road.
Finally.
Only 1 month to the day, I think, from when we planned to leave the first time.
Oh, my.
Woohoo! You know how life is.
Mm-hmm. It has a way of getting in its own way.
It is what it is. It is what it is. So we're very excited about that. That's what's happening. We're probably coming to your town. So stay tuned to the social media. Got those little mic thing we're going to try. So we're going to try to do some version of the show from the road, and it should be good. So follow along, please. And also tell us if we're in your neighborhood or whatever. You know, if you see, hey, we're coming through this way, send me a message. Maybe we can meet up. Maybe not, but maybe. And that's it. So that's it. GBBC, Saturday. Love you. We love you, Ray Shaver.
Right back at you.
Canada, do you have anything to close this thing out with Ray Shaver? Do you have one last question for him?
Yeah, if there was one car that you could throw up on the auction site right now that you haven't seen that you just want to see, if there's one coveted car that you want to throw up there, what would it be?
Ooh, damn.
Ready? I know the answer to this one because people are looking for them and they're just not out there. The 911 GT1.
Oh!
Right?
Yeah. We're so lucky we get to see one over at Santa Clarita all the time. Mm-hmm. There's one in that little Wonderland.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think? I mean, that's a rare one.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah.
Shit, good question, Mike.
Bravo. Right.
Thank you to you as well.
Love you guys.
Mike, host of the Letterman podcast. Who is your guest tomorrow?
Oh, this is a fun one tomorrow. My girl, Candace Chisholm. She interviews me, and we go through the trip to New York and the whole thing. And I've got videos that I from the trip of Paul Schaefer playing and being in Steve Young's play, some of the stuff he's collected. And Candy and I just kind of go back and forth. It's going to be a great show.
I love it. So that'll be up tomorrow morning. Enjoy all of that. Thank you to Don Giller out there, who also for Stump the Dons and all of the archival stuff and everything else. And that's it. All right. We love everybody. Have a great weekend. And we'll see you from the road later. See you next Tuesday from somewhere. We have no idea where we'll be. Tuesday's probably what, Texas? I don't know. Louisiana?
You'll know when you
we'll
get
see
there.
How we do. Good night, everybody.